Hello and welcome to Veterans Voice. Mr. Bill's here with us today.
Good morning.
And we don't know where John's at.
John, are you out there in the fields harvesting?
Oh, no, that's next month. He's in the fields.
Oh, next month.
Yeah. That song, Ride Captain Ride, it was played earlier this month on a show about the USS Liberty, a unarmed American ship that was attacked during the Six Days War by Israeli warplanes and
torpedo boat.
And 34 Americans were killed and 171 or some ungodly amount were wounded on that attack, and they were in international waters. It's just, you know, flying the American flag wide, you know. And then not too long after that, the USS Pueblo was taken in international waters by North Korea, and it's still on display. The other night, we saw Brian Wilson, and he said that he had stood on the deck of the USS Pueblo in North Korea.
And yeah, so, wasn't that something?
Yeah, that was really interesting. But I just wanted to play that song because I liked it. I didn't like, you know, what happened to those sailors, but I liked the song. And we're going to the one of the men we talked to, John Innes, was a lieutenant on the Liberty. He was wounded very badly by the attacks by the Israelis on that ship, and he wrote a book which we talked about on that show. And you can go to that website, USSLiberty.com, and you can see the book that John wrote, and he. And you can order that book if you want to. It's really a good book. He sent me a lot of good things. We talked for a while before the show, and he sent me some really nice stuff from the USS Liberty.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, he stayed in the military. Boy, I don't know why he stayed, but he did stay in the military. But he's a good guy.
For medical care.
Oh, I'm sure. He really got hurt bad.
You bet.
And something is coming up by one of our good members and good friends, Gary Locker. And Gary Locker is a non-vet, and he's really into movies. He knows more about movies than anybody I know.
He's got a projector down in his basement that I couldn't carry.
It's just like they used back in the 50s.
Yeah,
and the 60s.
One of those big old huge projectors.
And he and Steve Stone wrote a wonderful book. It's called Your Place in History, Theaters of Portland. And he's going to be at 1 p.m. this Sunday, June 21st, at the Hollywood Theater. And you can, for $5 admission, you can go, and he'll sign books. Him and Gary and Steve will sign copies of their book. You can buy the book from them. And they're also going to show a couple movies, too. Before the Dark, a short film on the history and demolition of the Oriental Theater. Remember the Oriental?
Oh, yes.
The Great Old Theater.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also The Smallest Show on Earth, a 1957 movie about a couple who inherit a theater. So that's Sunday at 1 p.m., June 21st, at the Hollywood Theater. And our good friend Gary Locker is going to be there.
Oh, that's a fascinating book. Anybody that's a movie aficionado, why should really take a look at that, because it's really got some good stuff in it.
Yeah, he brought it to the meeting we had on Sunday, and man, we looked through it, and it was just great.
Yeah, it was.
It was just a great.
Yeah, the historical bits that I had a chance to look at were really interesting.
Yeah, in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking with Tim King of SalemNews.com, which I got to learn about Tim from Gail and Eddie, who live down in Patagonia.
Yeah.
And Eddie writes a lot of articles that Tim uses on his new show. But also, there's something really interesting here that California towns challenge feds on military recruiting. And two towns nestled in the rugged coastline of the liberal politics of Northern California have fought the federal government by banning the U.S. military from recruiting minors within the city limits. Now the federal government is, guess what, Bill? Fighting back.
Oh, sure they will. They'll cut off the money.
Yeah. It's Arcata and what's the other one down there? Arcata.
Oh.
And another town. I don't see it on here. But they're Eureka.
Eureka. Yeah.
So they've done it. And so the Justice Department is taking them to court, saying that, you know, that parents sign for these kids to go into the military if they're at a certain age, and they just, you know, they just won't quit, will they?
No, they just won't.
They just won't.
They got to have them bodies.
Yeah, no child left behind.
Got all them body bags they got to fill.
Yeah, no child left behind. So, but the folks down there say, you know, they're ready for the fight, and they'll take up the cause against the military recruiting these young people.
Well, the deceptive methods that those recruiters use is just atrocious.
Yeah, one of the things in here, this is out of the 2008 Army Recruiting Handbook by the United States Army Recruiting Command. You will find that establishing trust and credibility with students, even 7th and 8th graders, can positively impact your high school and post-secondary school recruiting efforts.
Well, I remember going to a teacher's convention here in Portland years ago, and it was for grade school teachers.
Mm, oh, yeah.
And they had a recruiting booth set up at that time.
That was at the convention center.
Yes, it was.
And they had recruiters right in there, like you said, right in the...
Yeah, and these were grade school children or grade school teachers.
Yeah. Also, something else that I got a message, VA healthcare enrollment made easier. So, folks, if you tried to get VA healthcare earlier on and got turned down, chances are a lot better. VA healthcare eligibility rules changed on Monday, June 15, 2009, making it easier for more veterans to enroll in VA healthcare system. The VA has also provided a web-based calculator for veterans to enter their income information, number of dependents, and zip code to determine if their income falls within the new income threshold adjustments. Veterans can check to see if they qualify under new rules for veteran health care by visiting www.va.gov/health eligibility. Veterans are also encouraged to contact VA health resource centers at 1-877-222-8387, and they'll help you there. So a lot of the folks that, you know, applied earlier that you know, made too much money or what. See, I don't think there should be a means test.
No, there shouldn't be.
You know, when that draft notice come, it didn't say, you know, you're a number.
You got a job or?
Yeah, they didn't ask me.
What's your income?
Yeah. But also.
We got a job for you.
Boy, do they. VA Medical created HIV and hepatitis C. Through one of our group members, I was contacted by the CBS News in Washington. I think it's from the phone number. The request was for anyone that had developed HIV or AIDS from the lack of properly cleaning the colonoscopy equipment at the VA hospitals to contact CBS. Please, if you know of anyone, have them contact Ms. Betty Chin at bc2@cbsnews.com. And what happened was that they weren't cleaning the equipment between the testing.
Boy.
That just seems like it's something that, you know, would automatically think.
Oh, my God. I just can't even think about that.
I just can't imagine they didn't. They just did not clean
the
equipment.
That was in two or three hospitals, was it, back in the East?
Yeah, Florida was one of them, I think. And I can't remember the other one was. How scientists view Kaizen as assess evidence, a study of the Institute of Medicine evaluation of health effects in Vietnam and Agent Orange, which they're going to fight us to the last one of us Vietnam vets are pushing up daisies.
That's another thing that you've got to remember is that your life is finite and their life is infinite.
Yeah.
And they can outlast you.
Yeah, that's one of the things. So here's a test to find out if you had Agent Orange. So when you die in Liberia, if a flower grows on top of your grave, then you didn't have dioxin. Have it, huh? But if the fire dies, you had dioxin.
If the flowers thrive.
Yeah, if the fires go, you didn't. If it doesn't, then you're just fine. But those are just a few of the things that is on the news that people can think about. But I like that Arcata and Eureka fighting the recruiters. Yeah. Well, we had them here out of our schools for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Till that No Child Left Behind came in.
You know, that's been a boon, hasn't it? Oh, No Child Left Behind?
Yeah, well, No Child Living Left Behind.
Yeah.
So that's a real problem.
If they're still moving.
Yeah, if they're still moving, then they weren't dioxin. They didn't get dioxin. We're going to be talking here in just a few minutes. Well, right now, really. We're going to talk with Tim King, and Tim King is with SalemNews.com, which, like I was telling some of the folks, Eddie and Gail, who live in Patagonia, you know, turned us on to them. And I go to their website all the time, and we'll give that out here, or Tim can give it out. Well, I'll give it out. www.salem-news.com. That's the website you can go on. And it's internet news, and it's a very good
source. Huh?
Good source, uh-huh. Really good source. And Tim, are you there?
You bet I am. Good morning.
Hey Tim, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, it's good. How are you guys?
So far so well. I got up out of bed, and it only took me 5 minutes instead of 10 to decide which shoe to put on. But other than that, I'm doing pretty good. So
there you go.
Hey, Tim.
I didn't get up and read my name in the obituary. Things are just fine, right?
Yeah. Tim, could you give us a little background on yourself before we start?
Sure. You know, I've been in TV news for most of my life, and I'm almost always one of the only veterans in the newsroom. As you know how, you know, things are set up in this nation, not a lot of veterans find their way into television news, not nearly enough.
Right.
So over the years, I was always the one who was sent off on, you know, the veteran story. And then I, you know, developed my own way of finding those stories. And over the years, we eventually started Salem News. And now, you know, our advocacy for veterans is constant, never ending, daily. And, you know, I've spent time overseas in both the war theaters covering especially what our Oregon Guard guys in particular are going through today.
Yeah, we want to talk about that in just a little bit.
Yeah, it's just a never-ending list, obviously, of needs that we, you know, do our best to swing at. And I'm sure in the end, not much of a difference, but hopefully something.
Oh, I think a difference. So when were you in the service?
Early 80s Marine Corps during the Beirut period, which is, you know, I would just throw that out because for all those guys out there from that time period that feel like their service isn't very recognized.
There
was actually a lot going on.
Sure was a lot going on then. Yeah, that was a horrible time, wasn't it?
Oh.
Beirut barracks went down and just a lot of stuff. But you know that old Ronald Reagan, he was quite the guy, wasn't he?
He's my hero.
Yeah, he's a real hero.
We'll build that statue for him.
Yep. So sure. Talk about a little bit about how you started Salem News and why you started it.
Well, I appreciate being able to say that. KATU was my employer at the time until 3.5 years ago. They had me in Salem covering the greater Salem area while my friend Eric Mason covered more of the legislative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And Salem-News.com started because I had just a couple of minutes a day to you know, for the air. And there was so much more material that I was coming up with every day that we couldn't squeeze in on K2. So Salem-News.com began as an overflow for news and information, just simply so I could put it out there. And it just, you know, it got going on its own. It became one of the Google News providers 2 years in. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, did you get a lot of hits? I'm sure you do.
Yeah, you know, we went from we got up to 600 people a day after 2 years, and then we were picked up by as a Google News provider. We went up to 6,000 on the average, and then it's just gone up from there since then. I mean, we get a lot of traffic from Oregon. We get a lot from the whole nation because of the stories that we cover often being of a national nature and things that help veterans again.
Right, right. Have you ever had Larry Scott from VAWatchdog.org write any articles for your for SalemNews.com?
Well, I certainly get VA Watchdog, you know, press news stuff all the time. Yeah. Along with many other groups. And I'm, you know, the name's rolling through my brain. it's getting a little bit slowed down in places, and the name doesn't ring a bell, yeah. but it's like it's possible.
Yeah, Larry Scott, he started VAWatchdog.org, and he's a great guy, and he has a lot of good information.
You bet.
On that website. We've had him on the show a couple times, and every time he comes on, he gives some new and important information that's good for veterans, you know. And you guys would really fit perfect together, I think.
Oh, yeah.
VA Watchdog and SalemNews.com.
You know, we're just at that point now where we're starting to find those alliances that are so important.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, and then obviously being on the line with you guys is part of that, too. Yeah. And so, I will look out. And Larry is somebody that, you know, we're certainly familiar with. I just ran through. I don't think he's written any articles for us, but I hope that we can put that together.
Yeah, I do, too. It'd be great. So talk about how did you get sent to the war zone?
Well, the Oregon Guard asked me, you know, basically in the whole beginning, that was Afghanistan back in 06, you know, are you interested? And the 41st, who, you know, these guys are getting ready to move back over right now. They're still in Georgia, but they're really close.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just a thing where all the pieces fit, and Fox in Portland actually wanted to buy some of the work for me, so that helped. And yet, in spite of everything, you know, me being willing to work, you know, and put my name on the Fox, you know, name, so to speak. When I went to Iraq last summer, they wouldn't buy that. And so it's just interesting, you know, the whole Iraq thing is, oh, God, it's so tragic.
Oh, it's just horrible. It's just horrible.
Yeah. And what do? You know, one of these things that I can't get my brain away from is the whole Sons of Iraq program. You know, we started paying these guys, right? And so that did bring a degree of peace because suddenly some of these Sunni guys are, you know, they're opening up these checkpoints. But, man, we pushed them into a corner. You know, we paid them, and then they were making $305 a month. And I'm thinking, you know, we got 100,000 guys making $305. And now the economy of Iraq is totally impacted by it. Of course, it's all, you know, spending money for guns and this kind of thing.
Sure. But
those people are so screwed over there right
now. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's just like Vietnam. I remember in Vietnam when the only thing that kept the economy of South Vietnam going was American money.
Oh, yeah.
As soon as American money pulled out, that was it for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, the same things are going on. So were you with the Oregon Guard the whole time on that trip?
On that one, I was, but interestingly, the 41st had control of almost all of Afghanistan. I mean, they had a big presence everywhere. So being able to hop from one spot to another was really easy. You know, in Iraq, it was a totally different game because I was with the Oregon Guard too, but I was with an aviation group that had never had an embedded reporter, and they really didn't know what to do with me. So in Iraq, I was really almost like a free agent moving around, spent time with the Marines in the Anbar province, moved around Iraq a lot, and it's just a totally different attempt when you do it. That it's just different things that you have to set up. Whereas if you're moving around a theater where it's all one specific group, it's a lot easier. I mean, each has its own.
How do you get the information out? Is there any control over it, or
censored?
There certainly is. Or in Iraq, it was a totally different feeling. Afghanistan, you know, is like the Wild West.
It's I can imagine.
Yeah, but Iraq, it's this big, huge built-up presence with big, you know, miles, you know, across American bases. So, like, when I was in Kuwait, I went ahead and got some video of some different landmarks at Camp Buring that were just interesting things that represented the place. And then I had the Army CID chasing me around for about 2 weeks because of that. And it's like, are you guys kidding? And, you know, at the same time, there are things that are happening within the military that are so tragic that they won't even touch with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, I mean, right. Mm-hmm.
Including, you know, I got mistakenly put on that bird. I know you asked me about Afghanistan, but...
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, whatever you want.
I got stuck on that CH-47 in Iraq at Fallujah that was full of detainees, and I watched these guys get, you know, abused for the next 90 minutes. It was terrible, and they didn't really realize until the very end that I was rolling video, and I ended up being taken away to a colonel and having to record over my footage and not walk away with it.
They made you record
over
you?
They made me do it. And this guy and I, we had a shouting match, but I wasn't going to win, you know what I mean? I was surrounded by these dudes, and they had me in their facility. So
yeah, they had all the guns.
Sure.
They had the guns.
Yeah. You know. So when you were on that plane, tell us what happened, man.
I think they had 12 or 13 prisoners. They were all wearing white gowns that were humiliating, and they were being forced to sit in the CH-47 cross-legged on the floor with the bench seat folded up into the fuselage. It was hot. I don't know if it was 110. I don't know how hot it was. And there were three different colored lights that were hanging from these guys' heads, and they had a band going around their forehead, and they were blindfolded. And then this light looked like something you'd see the kids with on Halloween. You stick it in the refrigerator, the neon light. And the three colors indicated where these guys were going. And my wife at the time was familiar with some guys who were taken in that were some pretty high-level, you know, insurgents. I don't even know if that's even a fair word to use for people over there. But that may have been the case that these were some really high-level guys, but there were Blackwater people on that aircraft. And if these guys would move, you know, they were getting kicked, they were getting shoved, they were getting their head yanked into place. They were moaning and they were crying, and they were men, some of them in their 60s, and it was not, it was horrible. It was just one of the most rotten things I've ever had to watch in my life. And,
Oh, man.
When they brought me to that colonel, he said, he basically inferred that I had snuck onto the aircraft in order to get that action. And it's like, the Marines put me on that aircraft, and I had nothing to say about what aircraft they're going to let me on. You know, the crew chief is the last guy that says yay or nay with a thumbs up or a thumbs down.
Mm-hmm.
I was really shocked that they put me on that bird. But it's fate. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was meant to.
Boy, too bad you didn't have a backup copy of that.
Damn it. You know, I couldn't even. We have an artist with Salem News, and he would have been willing to try to draw it, but I was never even able to get that far. But maybe. Maybe it's worth telling. Mm-hmm. It's worth showing it. It would be worth having people really get.
Oh, yeah. So when you were out in the field with the guard, what was the reaction to either Iraq or Afghanistan? Doesn't matter which. How did the Afghanis or the Iraqis look on the Americans, look on our Oregonian troops?
Sure. Well, in Afghanistan, you've got a mix, and it's very regional, right? So if you're in a hot area, you know, you notice that the little kids stop waving to the Humvees as they're going by.
Mm.
You see a lot more black turbans. So in that setting, you're strictly viewed as the enemy, and there's no good reception. But in, like, throughout Kabul and different parts of the country where I spent a lot of time, the Afghans have been through so much in 30 years with the Soviets. You know, I mean, you drive around that nation and you see little Russian looking kids everywhere because, you know, the Russians are so damn bad. And, and then the Taliban, I mean, there's a lot to be said about those guys too. They're really pretty bad.
Oh, so, sure.
Right. So, like, I interviewed this little American or this little kid on the streets of Kabul who was about 11 years old. I'm like, so what do you think of these American soldiers, you know, going through your streets? And he, through the terp, he says, oh, well, the Americans come to my country and they bring peace and prosperity, and they kill the Taliban. And it's like, whoa, is this really a little dude saying this?
Yeah.
They're so deep. They've seen so much tragedy.
Oh, yeah.
So in Afghanistan, you certainly get a mix, but you get some really strong reception, especially the Oregon Guard, because at the main base at Camp Phoenix, the guard that they had replaced, and man, I'm not going to be able to remember accurately. I believe it was Tennessee, okay, but I could be wrong on that. But it was from one of the southern states. They would shoot pellet guns at the little kids if they walked within so many feet of the base. The Oregon guys are like friends with the little kids. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the biggest problems over there is every year or every time that a year passes and a whole command pulls out, and a whole command goes back in, and they don't know anything that's really been going on over the last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just all that good development, maybe, or bad, is going to be impacted and totally changed. And
right.
I just, you know, in Iraq, to answer your question, everyone is really super nice because I think they all think they're going to get their head blown off. You know what I'm saying? If they're
right.
not. So in Iraq, it was more of like a total fear-based, you know, forced smiles. Oh, hello, the Marines are here. You know, sure, mm-hmm. come on in. You know, I mean, who's going to mess with Marines? Who's going to be a jerk
mm-hmm.
when you got a platoon of Marines standing there to search your house? You just, so it's really hard to gauge in Iraq. The only people in Iraq that I met who honestly told me that they appreciated the coalition presence were the few people that I met that actually just worked for the U.S. government. And most of them aren't even Iraqi. You know what I mean? They're
right.
not.
Wow.
So good luck in Iraq finding people to say,
yeah.
you know, great idea, George Bush. You're not
yeah,
going to find it.
Yeah,
you're
he's quite the guy. You know, in Afghanistan, when, you know, we first invaded Afghanistan and they were dropping the cluster bombs in there, and the cluster bombs, you know, looked like toys. You know, some of those looked like butterflies and different little toy Coke cans, different little toys. And a lot of those kids were getting just, you know, blown up by these, you know, these cluster ammunition. And then here we come, we're going to feed them. So we drop, you know, those packets of food, which food they never ate, you know, and they were afraid to pick them up because they didn't know if they were cluster bombs. So that fear these kids have, or the people in general have, about the Americans, you know, that's pretty truthful, you know. They came by it honestly.
It is. You know, one of the things I wonder right now is, did you create a terrorist today? Meaning, you know, what was your regard for the local people?
Right, right.
Most of the insurgency, those folks didn't have anything against us at one point. You know
right.
what I mean? It's so tragic.
Oh, it
I
is tragic.
Could you define for me insurgent?
Yeah, because you said something interesting was, you know, that word insurgent. So how do you think that plays out?
I think an insurgent in this event is somebody who's defending their nation against an occupying force,
mm-hmm.
and there's not a lot more to it. You know, I don't know. We're so clever, aren't we, with the words? I mean, and trying to come up with phrases that kind of cover up what we're really
asking. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, but that's the name of the game. It's all, you know, renaming the nomenclature and
mm-hmm.
Torture. What do they call torture now?
Enhanced interrogation.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's like, oh, come on. And yet, you know, the sheep are always going to go ahead and fall into step, you know, to some degree. And until we can control that, I don't know how you change that.
I don't either.
A question that always comes to my mind is, excuse me, how do the Taliban, are they organized you know, where do they get their ideas and marching orders and equipment and financing from?
You know, there's great history on this. The Taliban, one hand, is not a very old group. You know, they really are literally some of the guys that we were financing between 79 and 89 to help oust.
Yeah, what do they call them in Afghanistan, right?
Right. Yeah, you got, you know.
Fighting the Russians?
Yeah.
Fighting the Russians, right. And Mujahideen, you know, is any Islamic warrior that's fighting in that sense. The Taliban are just really super defined. And remember, too, that the Taliban are mostly Pashtun. And the Pashtun people occupy a region that stretches right across that border between Pakistan and Afghanistan. And they don't know that. They don't view that border as existing. And that's the whole problem with that whole part of the world, is that it's tribal.
Right.
And it's not divided along. Yeah. Rand McNally lines, you know, it's not, they just don't see it the same way at all. And so, and there are a lot of Pashtuns that don't like or support the Taliban. It's also a fact that a lot of the folks that our guys end up tangling with aren't from the Taliban at all. And they, over there, people just call them ACMs for anti-coalition militias because, you know, you don't know really what group they're from. Now, as to their financing, I don't know that much about it. I mean, the Taliban, remember, they're like Barry McCaffrey, man. They're anti-drug.
They want
to,
they are.
You know, reduce and eliminate all of the pot fields and the opium fields, which is the way that people survive over there. I mean, right, wrong, or indifferent. So, you know, it's like just different thoughts that pop into my head. They have a super high attrition rate at basic training in Kabul. Those guys defect with their uniforms all the time.
And their weapons?
Yep. And you don't know who's who. Talk about not knowing who's who, because the Afghans wear the woodland camouflage, right, that our guys went to in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And then our guys have the more, almost the Vietnam-looking, you know, new-style lighter camis. And so you've got these guys running around all over the country that have, they've got their AK, they've got their uniform. You have no idea if they're legit or not walking right down the street. I mean, God, it's really a tough one on that, you know.
Yeah.
But the Taliban, you know, they scare the Jesus out of people down there. They really do. And most Afghans just go, oh, my God, you know. I mean, people here think that they're such religious zealots, and they're not. You know, there are plenty. There are just a lot of people there are just admirably very faithful and religious, and a lot of them, they could give two hoots, and they just talk about the religious people the way we talk about, yeah, you know, even religious people. So it's not, the perceptions in the United States are so far off, you know.
Yeah.
And
do they move about the country, Afghanistan and Pakistan and Iraq, do they move about those places freely?
Well, in Iraq, they did until those checkpoints were established by the Sons of Iraq, and then suddenly the Sunnis were, you know, most of the people that we end up fighting are a lot of them in Iraq are Sunni. And so then when you had the Sunnis out looking out for the quote unquote terrorists, it really was a super effective model. And then people weren't allowed to move. No, people in Iraq don't move around freely at all. I mean, in Afghanistan, it's a lot more free movement. You don't have any border restrictions between Afghanistan and Pakistan. I'm sure you guys know that. Jalalabad Road goes straight through. And, you know, it's so important, too, because they don't have any wood in lots of Afghanistan and Kabul. It's been so long since they had any trees. And if there is a tree, it's just burned for firewood. So they have to bring the wood in from Pakistan, or the people wouldn't even have the ability to survive the winters.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about cold, you guys. You know, right? Afghanistan's just
cold, yeah.
So cold that you can't. They don't even. The fighting dies off during the winter because you can't do it. You know what I mean? It's so damn cold.
Yeah.
They've got to. And they, you know, they need to stay warm, just like, you know.
Yeah, they stay.
The availability of wood is an important plays an important part in the economy or the subsistence in that area.
I think, yeah, it does, absolutely. And food is so, you know, when you look, I've got a roll of photos from Afghanistan from the early 70s when it was still just basically a peaceful communist country with no war of any kind, and it had all of the things, the features of any nation. It had the rolling green hills in Kabul. It had the beautiful river. Today, it's like a 2-foot-wide, brown, polluted, you know, trickle of water. I mean, the whole place has just been so hammered. And the Soviets would actually poison their water systems. You know, I mean, they were, for everything we ever do bad, it is important to remember that there are military groups out there that just make us look like angels.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah. We're talking with Tim King, and Tim's with SalemNews.com. We're talking about, this is KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, and we're talking about his experience in Afghanistan and in Iraq. And I want to talk a little bit, we talked on the phone a little bit about the Oregon National Guard having some problems here. Oregon's own toxicologist points out toxicity of hexavalent chromium. Can you talk about that one? I know that's Dr. Levig's point, but it was on your website.
Right. Well, this is something that the docs paid a lot of attention to because anything that has Halliburton associated with it, you know, obviously throws our radar right into gear. And this is a thing where these soldiers were. And then, yeah, there are Oregon Guard soldiers. If I remember right, it's primarily an Indiana Guard story. I think there were a lot more of their guys that were impacted by it. But yeah, they were brought into this area. They were made to hang around these chromium salts, and it's just, you know, the impacts. Of course, they're not fully known. Like anything from the military, we don't know for possibly years what's really.
Yes, that's
it,
generations even.
Generations, right.
Yeah.
But at least one of these soldiers I know became sick very quickly. And you know, the notion of sticking up for those guys. It's okay. I mean, you know, a lot of nice Southern gentlemen from KBR and Halliburton that you're going to meet over there. You're not going to meet anyone that's black. You're not going to meet anyone that's from the West Coast. You're not going to, you know, it's a strange situation with the contracting thing over there. Those guys.
Pretty
but anyway, yeah, it's just, you know, and this is just one more story where, you know, our people are put into this horrible situation, and then, you know, it's kind of up to them to figure it out, you know, because the government certainly isn't going to come along and say, hey, by the way, you were exposed to whatever, and we're going to take care of you guys.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no, this is not that country. I know.
Oh, yeah. One of the things that was really interesting in this article, the suit claims KBR hid its civilian workers, evaluated chromium levels, and dismissed widespread symptoms, including constant nosebleeds that toxicologists call chrome nose. Chrome nose. That by being around this chromium. Would give these guys nosebleeds.
Sounds like a character out of Dick Tracy, Chrome
yeah.
Nose.
Oh, man.
But, you know, the whole deal with America, you know, you can look back all the way back with the American troops. You know, Vietnam was Agent Orange, you know, the first Gulf War, you know, this thing going on now, you know, and then the testing of the nuclear testing on American soldiers and the whole thing that the American government just will not take responsibility, you know, for anything. And KBR is going to, you know, get away with this as long as they can.
Yep. And the only people, you know, be in that mix that won't get away with it will be the actual workers from KBR, you know what I mean, at the bottom end of the food chain.
Right.
Yeah.
They pretty much take it, you know, in the shorts like the military does to a degree, but... And you, God, those guys, you know, there are no chow hall facilities in all of the two war theaters. 100% of the food is created by these KBR guys at a tune of money that just, God, it's expensive, you know.
Yeah.
It's a strange, you know, different kind of setup. And I think, you know, I mentioned to you, Marv, that we've been for the last little over a year just pounding away on the contamination of the two Marine Corps bases.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to talk to you about.
Oh, I appreciate it.
Go ahead. Talk on that. This is an interesting story.
Well, El Toro, I was stationed there in the early 80s, and I saw things that I knew were pretty wrong. Like one day we had a bunch of, above-ground fuel bags that were 20,000-gallon fuel bags that were surrounded by a dirt berm.
With the bladders?
Yeah, exactly. Fuel
the bladders.
Right. Yep. And we had 20,000 gallons of JP-4, and this bag ruptured, and we had to get in this dirt berm and stand in up to 2 feet of this, you know, jet fuel.
Propellant.
Yep, and then wade it toward the collection point so that the pumps could suck it out. I mean, just a tiny little flash or example of what the level of environmental thinking is there. So while this is taking place, I mean, that's just a day in the life, but from the late 40s all the way through until, you know, probably right when the base closed, Dow and DuPont have been selling this chemical degreaser. It's a chlorine-based degreaser called trichloroethylene, or TCE.
Mm-hmm.
And the Marines were never given adequate knowledge and you know, instructions on what to do with it when they're done with it. They would clean the jet fighters with it. They would clean those grease deposits, and then basically they would dump it into the groundwater, and they just didn't know. And then it would all flow down toward my squadron, which, oh, I've got so many buddies that are dead now, and it's just, it's so wrong, you know. We didn't have any idea, but we were in the collection point for all of this. So today at El Toro, you've got a plume moving in the underground aquifers of TCE. It ironically stretches right underneath Irvine City Hall.
Ooh.
And it's so bad. And Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, which obviously is an active Marine Corps base,
right,
that's been recognized. I mean, there's data, and all of that came to a halt Saturday when this panel commissioned by the Department of the Navy, talk about the, you know, the conflict of investigating yourself, right? So the Department of the Navy hires this panel of scientists, puts them together. They're the National Resource Council, Research Council, and they came back and basically said, oh, yeah, all that stuff on Camp Lejeune, that data, we can't use that. And not only can we not use it, But we've concluded that we'll never be able to get adequate data to know if TCE caused those Marines to be sick. And it's like, are you kidding
me?
So it's such a one step forward, two steps back kind of game. This is causing cancer. It's causing all of these problems. And it's just like Agent Orange in that it shows up in the children.
Yeah.
And so you just, you know.
Guffor syndrome, same, same.
Yeah.
Same, same.
Yeah.
I think last night I heard that they came out and said, it's that group you're talking about now, that came out and said that this had no, that didn't cause any of the sickness on Lejeune.
Yep.
They came out, I think it was last night, I'm not sure, but it just, this thing came out and says, nope, didn't have anything to do with those Marines getting sick.
Well, this
Nothing.
Is your standard media, too. They ran with that. You know, this group of morons puts out this press release, and all of the stations just run it without even thinking about what they're publishing.
Exactly.
Gosh, is this true?
Well, that's nationwide,
yeah. Didn't even go into it. So here we are, you know, working with these key people in the nation, mostly in North Carolina, and we're just blasting this stuff up on Google. And, you know what's beautiful is that we publish these stories and we get to see who comes to see our site and who doesn't.
Yeah, you bet.
The Senate Armed Services Committee is a daily visitor to SalemNews.com. And so in the end, whether we reach all the human beings we want to or not, if we're reaching some of those key people that are decision makers in D.C. that are making those, you know, then so we've got dialogue with them, or we've got an audience with those guys. And I just, you know, I'm so thankful for that.
Yeah,
I don't know what.
Yeah.
Each time I hear the word Lejeune, I have to remember them marching the recruits into the swamp and
and killing them. Yeah.
Yeah.
God, how many guys died that day?
Oh, that's unbelievable! Unbelievable.
Yeah.
So, what are some of the stories that Salem News is working on right now that is dealing with veterans? Anything new?
That's a fantastic question. Like, I can tell you that in the last 24, I got really sucked back into the Oregon news mode because we've had a lot of stuff breaking down here in Salem. Not really great stuff. But, one of the stories that we put up just a couple of days ago is written by a veterans advocate that is somebody who, you know, Shad Mashad.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And that story is called Deny Until They Die.
Yes, I saw that.
Jeremy Price, right? So, you know, that's a cousin to all these other stories that we're talking about. I'm personally working on that Sons of Iraq piece. I've got a bunch of video that has never been seen by anyone. I've got some stuff that's going to really blow people away.
You know, we're talking with Tim King of SalemNews.com. And if you can go to his website, it's www.salem-news.com. And you can go on there and see some of his stuff. And this is KBO 90.7 FM. But, sorry, Tim.
Oh, no, that's great. You know, I was watching, I have my nephew just rolled up from California for a couple days yesterday. And I was showing him the peace protest from, it's only really been a few weeks, and KBU, you know, was here at the Capitol steps.
Yeah,
and,
you betcha.
And, it was funny. I had just written a story about how ridiculous it is that these guys, like, Limbaugh keeps saying that Obama's a socialist.
Oh,
right?
God.
And so that story was picked up. Well, one of the ladies who works for the Pacifica Network ended up doing a nice hour-long, or not hour-long, but a decent interview with me about all of this ridiculous Obama being a socialist thing. And there's so much education.
Tell people, a lot of people, the Sons of Iraq, you know what it is, the Sons of Iraq? Is that what you were going
right.
to talk about? Tell people what that Sons of Iraq
sure.
is.
When George W. Bush was trying to tidy up his political picture and they conceived what we know as the surge, part of that process was to designate a certain amount of money to go in and basically start paying the guys that we had been fighting. And so they you know, through the relations with our people that were like us when we were in the military, the ground pounding soldiers and Marines, they go out and they make relations with people.
Mm-hmm.
So they formed what were called the Sunni Awakening Councils. And then the Sunni Awakening Councils created the Sons of Iraq. And they were throughout all over Baghdad, but they were throughout all of the country, and they set up what they call CLC checkpoints, and I'm trying to remember what CLC means, but these checkpoints were manned by these young men from Iraq that were hand-selected by their sheikhs because they were people that passed a background check or whatever, you know, and so basically all the traffic at that point was now having to move through those checkpoints. It cost, there were 100,000 sons of Iraq, and they were paid $305 a month. And that's the program that we had in force, brought the violence down, and then about a year ago we started reducing it, handed it back to the Shiite government of Iraq, and they're just like, oh yeah, we'll take care of the Sunnis. You know, I mean, there's a problem over there between Sunni and Shiite people that we have done nothing but just you know, carve out the middle of. And as soon as we leave, there's going to be a horrible civil war.
Because Musada al-Sadr is coming back.
That guy has a lot of pull.
I heard he's in Iran. He's going to be. He's studying to become a mullah.
Yeah, he's studying to become a head man.
Yeah, and
Ayatollah.
Yeah, Ayatollah. He's going to come back as an Ayatollah, and when he gets back into Iraq, he's got a lot of pull now. Boy, is he going to have a lot of pull then? And he does not like Americans.
Mm-mm, not one bit.
And there's going to be definitely some problems there. And you know, with the American troops going into Afghanistan, people got, you know, that is a huge drug producing country. I mean, they produce heroin. I mean, the poppies for heroin and all kinds of stuff. And you think the American people think there was a drug problem in Vietnam with the American troops? Just wait.
Oh yeah.
Just wait till a whole bunch of American troops get into Afghanistan. You know, American troops, just because it's an all volunteer army, doesn't mean they don't do drugs.
Hey, people are getting high as we sit here right now. People are sitting in Baghdad.
Sure they are.
Big fat doobies right
now.
You
bet they are.
And they don't. You know, I mean, you guys know the history on this, and how many times somebody would die in Vietnam, and the saying would be, "Hey, at least they were stoned."
Yeah,
and we lost the concept of all of this.
I think, you know, Americans just don't understand that. They just and you know, with the suicide, next month we're going to do a show on the suicide rate of returning vets. 120 war veterans commit suicide each week.
Oh, I know.
120 each week. And you know that Oregon is one of the states that have one of the highest rates of suicide for returning Afghan Iraqi vets.
Whose figures are those, Oregon. Marvin?
I don't know. I haven't read it.
Oh.
there was something that came out about a month ago, if you guys remember. And I think Portland has one of the worst suicide rates in the nation, aside from the military.
Right.
So yeah, aside from the military. Right.
Aside from the military.
Yeah. So you can imagine what's going on within the military. But this is this report that I have. It was written by Penny Coleman, who is a widow of a Vietnam veteran who took his own life after coming home. Her latest book, Flashback, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder, Suicide, and the Lessons of War. And she's the one who got all this information. It talks about it in here, about where the report came from.
Uh-huh.
But I just haven't got to read all of it yet. But, boy, that's a lot of people a week committing suicide.
And if you got to get the Pentagon to acknowledge that, because they're doing their damnedest to conceal the number of suicides.
Do you know Bud Brown? He's a professor at Western Oregon State University.
I know Bud Brown, yes.
Bud is a good buddy of ours. He's a great guy. And I was talking to him the other day, and he, you know, he deals with murder cases, you know, veterans involved in murder cases.
Right.
And he told me, he says, Marv, he says, you're not going to believe this, but, boy, Oregon has a real problem with veterans committing suicide. And Bud would know if anybody
would
know.
He would know, yeah.
Yeah, Bud would know. So what should people look for coming out on your news?
Well, look for a whole bunch of stories from people like Bud. I mean, these professors that we've got writing for us all around the nation have the sharpest minds that I've seen or dealt with in my life. So you know, look for a lot of really advanced thinking on the Iran conflict. Look for work from, we've got a guy on the ground in Gaza that, you know, I mean, he doesn't quote work for us. It's not fair. I'm blowing my horn, but he does. I mean, when he sends his reports to us, he sends them off to Press TV in Tehran at the same time. And I'm exceedingly proud to be able to be associated with anyone. Look for, you know, I need to get myself over to Gaza for a while.
Yeah, no kidding.
Nothing more important.
Yeah, right now, that's a key, isn't it?
It is.
That's a key. That's a key.
Yeah. They don't understand the towers with the IDF soldiers just shooting, you know, Palestinians for sport. I mean, it's got to end. It's got to end.
Tim, I want to thank you for coming on and taking your time to talk to us today. And well, go ahead, buddy.
It's just a pleasure. No. I'm talking over you. Please, sorry.
Okay. And people can go to your website, which is www.salem-news.com, and they can see all the stuff that you have. You have archives and just a bunch of great, great stuff you're not going to see on any of the other, you know, the media. They're just not going to see it.
Yeah, those of us that have had different experiences remember them and recall them and tell the stories about them, but it's very important for somebody that's been there to be heard.
Yeah.
You know, our story on My Lai, which is just kind of like it was, we were at the anniversary is a hard word to use, but, you know, the
commemoration.
Commemoration. And that is one of many months that'll be a top story in our top 30, though it was written a year ago. But that's, you're right. You're just, you know, talking about the history and having archives available. And, you know, I wrote about a Marine the other day who was one of our World War One, World War Two, one of our top guys. And he was anti-war. I mean, so you learn these amazing things about people and African-Americans that excelled. That was Smedley Butler that I'm referring to, by the way.
Smedley.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Honorable
man. Tim, I want to thank you again.
Thank you guys so much.
And we'll have you on as much as we can, buddy.
Well, anything that we can do to work together is great with me. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks, Tim.
Thank you.
Have a good morning.
Okay,
bye-bye.
You too.
Bye.
Want to thank Tim for that great time. We only have 3 minutes left. And like I was saying, we're going to do the next month, we'll do the 120 war veterans commit suicide each month. And one of the reasons that the American people don't know why these guys are, men and women are doing this, because you don't see the war on TV. You know, they don't see what these troops are going through, you know, the killing of innocent men and women and children.
Emotional strain and the physical strain and the fear.
Well, it's not a war if you don't see it on TV, Bill.
That's right. Yeah.
And another thing is with the Iranians, these guys thought that there was a miscounting of all their votes and everything. These guys got out in the streets. Hundreds and thousands of them got out in the streets. In 2000, when we know our election was stolen, nobody got out in the streets.
Yeah, isn't that a shame?
Yeah, how about those Iranians, you know?
You bet.
And we didn't do anything. 2004, didn't do a thing. They're out in the streets protesting. And we're going to go out right now with the song, Where is the Rage? And Tammy, okay, and we'll see all of you folks. Well, we'll talk with you folks next month.
Thank you for your wonderful engineering, Tammy.
Thanks, Tammy. And Dorothy Ackerman, miss ya. Bye.
Grab some coffee on the go. In the car, sit back, turn on the radio. An attack outside of Baghdad, another chopper down. Flags will be at half-mast in the center of the town. The evening news comes on the TV. Two Marines are killed by Planet IED. They attack the convoy, blew a hole in the Humvee. Two Marines are killed, two families left to grieve. Our men and women are dying overseas. In a war that was starting, that didn't have to be. The brightest and the bravest just coming of age. Where is the anger? Oh, where is the rage? Where is the anger? Oh, where is the rage? A gray box draped in